Welcome to That Was Radio on WMKY, Morehead State Public Radio. On this program, we explore the golden age of radio, the 1930s through the 1950s. In addition to discussing the radio programs of the period, we also examine the personalities and events that shaped those programs. I'm your host, Leon Smothers. In this episode, we're featuring one of the classic radio sitcoms, Our Miss Brooks. Our Miss Brooks premiered on CBS Radio on July the 19th, 1948, and ran until July the 9th, 1957. It was also on CBS television for 4 years, 1952 through 1956. Our Miss Brooks was unusual for its time, as it featured an unmarried working woman who knew her own mind and spoke it. Miss Brooks was a clever and kind-hearted schoolteacher who could face adversity with aplomb, along with a sprinkling of sarcasm. Audiences of the day loved the program, and fans of old-time radio still do. The show featured a number of memorable and unique characters whose antics provided hilarious listening for millions of devoted fans. In addition to being a fan favorite, our Miss Brooks was also well-liked by the critics and by teachers. Eve Arden, the star of the show, was nominated for Radio Mirror Magazine's Comedienne of the Year 2 years in a row. In addition, the National Education Association and other teachers' groups recognized the program for its sympathetic portrayal of teachers. Since the show came rather late in radio's golden age, we are fortunate to have interviews with some of the program's cast, which I will be sharing, as well as providing clips from some of the show's broadcasts. Let's begin our discussion of the program at the top with Miss Brooks herself. Connie Brooks was an English teacher at Madison High School. Every week, as she faced the daily grind of teaching, she shared with the audience her internal monologue of witty remarks and insightful observation. Her monotone delivery showed that she was a straightforward, common-sense type of gal, except when it came to her relationship with Mr. Boynton, the school's biology teacher. It is clear from listening to the program that Miss Brooks genuinely cared about her students. She was more motherly than authoritarian and tried to keep them out of trouble. More often than not, though, she got herself into some sticky situation or other along the way. Still, all things considered, her job would have been delightful had it not been for her continual confrontations with Mr. Conklin, the school's boisterous and bullying principal, who seemed to take great pleasure in making her life miserable. Eve Arden, who portrayed Miss Brooks, was a multi-talented performer as well as an outstanding comedian. In July of 1982, radio historian John Dunning interviewed Arden, who was in the process of writing her autobiography. In the following clip, she tells how she got started in show business and how she chose her professional name.
I was going to the University of California in San Francisco, Berkeley, and during the summer, I got a job with the Henry Duffy Players in San Francisco. And from then on, I never looked backward, and I just went from one job to another. And then Lee Schubert happened to be out in California, and he was going to reopen the Ziegfeld Follies. This is sometime after Ziegfeld died, with Billy Burke, who was his widow. Mm-hmm. Her name on the marquee, she actually had nothing to do with it, but he saw me in a review that I did and signed me to go to New York, and I actually had my name up in lights on the back of the Winter Garden. You know, it faces on two sides in New York. And I did two Follies for them. I did the Theater Guild review. And then I came out to California and happened to do a picture with Eddie Horton. And the second picture I did was Stage Door. Then I did a whole series of pictures, but I would go back to New York and do a play every now and then, or a review. And I just have never stopped.
How about Mildred Pierce? You look at that now as a you were nominated for an Academy Award.
Yes, I was, and no one was more surprised than I to read about it in the paper as I was coming back from New York. So I thought, this I've got to go and see. I can't believe it, because, you know, unless you're Joan Crawford, who was starring in it, who worked almost every day, my part was done in kind of bits and pieces, and you try to keep some feeling of continuity, but it's really very amazing to you when something like this happens.
Is it true that you got your name from a cosmetic bottle?
Yes, it is.
That story is true.
That story is in there.
It came from Elizabeth Arden and Evening in Paris?
No.
Well, how did it go?
In Paris. I was reading a book, and the heroine was Eve. And I had a package of Elizabeth Arden's things, you see. And Lee Schubert said, "Now, you've got to change your name, because we're putting it up in lights tomorrow. And your name is much too long and difficult." My name was Cudenz, which nobody ever pronounced right, and I loathed my first name, which I'm not going to mention because there are people with that name who love it.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother had named me after the mayor of San Francisco's wife, and I thought that was a hell of a way to name your child. He was a friend of hers, but... So I was very delighted with Eve Arden, and there's a very funny story connected with that, which you'll have to read the book to find out.
Oh, okay.
By 1948, when Our Miss Brooks began on radio, Eve Arden had appeared in more than 40 movies. She had also been a regular on several popular radio programs, including The Danny Kaye Show and the very popular Seal Test Village Store, where she had replaced Joan Davis. In the Dunning interview, she also discussed how she got the role as Miss Brooks.
It came about rather strangely. I was in New York doing some publicity for the studio. And on the way back, I stopped in Chicago and stayed at the Ambassador Hotel with some friends. And having dinner one night, I was introduced to William Paley.
Mm.
And he asked me to dance, and he loved to dance, and so did I. So we kind of hit it off very well. And I think that was the beginning, because about a week later, I was called by CBS and asked to make a record for Our Miss Brooks. And I wasn't very interested in doing it. And I read the first script, and I said, I really don't think that this is funny enough and that I really want to do it. And Harry Ackerman, who was the producer, said, "We have two new writers we're putting on it this week, and if you'll have dinner with me in another week, I think you'll find it much improved." And I did. But then I said, "I'm taking my children to New York for the summer. And if you'll make the 13, it was to go on as a summer replacement.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'll make the 13 before we go, that'll be fine." So I did. And when I got to New York, we were out in Connecticut with our dear friends. At the end of the summer, I got a call from the, Frank Stanton.
Mm-hmm.
Of Columbia, CBS, and he said, "Congratulations." And I said, "What for?" And he said, "Miss Brooks is the number one show on the air."
Wow.
I want to add a few quick notes about the show's beginning. First, Arden didn't mention it, but her dance partner in Chicago, William Paley, was the chairman of the board at CBS. She also didn't mention that two other comedians had been considered for the part, Shirley Booth and Lucille Ball. Booth had actually auditioned, but was turned down for the role. And Lucille Ball had already committed to the role of Liz Cooper in My Favorite Husband. Finally, Harry Ackerman was responsible for developing the program, but Larry Burns was the show's producer. As I've mentioned, the primary thorn in Connie Brooks' side was the school principal, Osgood Conklin. The writers left no doubt from the very beginning that Conklin was to be a curmudgeon. Here is a clip from the first episode of Our Miss Brooks, in which Mr. Conklin is introduced.
I've got to get down early. The new principal takes over today.
What's his name, dear?
Mr. Conklin, Osgood Conklin.
Osgood Conklin? Why, I've known him for years. We went to school together.
Really, Mrs. Davis? What kind of a man is he, anyway?
Well, the other children used to call him Stoneface because he never laughed.
Oh, fine.
Well, I shouldn't say never. I did hand him a laugh one time when we were out ice skating. He was practically in hysterics.
What happened?
I broke my leg.
He sounds about as friendly as a subpoena.
I'll correct any nonsense of this new school, Martha, or my name isn't Osgood Conklin. I've heard all about their lack of principle and discipline, and I won't have it. Do you hear? No one is going to interfere with my making Madison High a well-run school. No one. If anyone gets in my way, I'll crush them. Step on them like so many ants. Squash them.
That's nice. Pass the marmalade, dear. And help yourself to some more toast.
I hate toast. As I was saying, Martha, I'm sure that the faculty at Madison High is totally incompetent.
Oh, please, Osgood, you mustn't let it irk you.
Irk? Irk?
Drink a little water, dear. It'll go away.
No understanding. No cooperation. Nobody knows what a difficult job I'm faced with. It's awful. Awful.
Please, Osgood, can't you talk without barking? Honestly, sometimes I think Prince is the only one who can really understand you.
Prince? Don't mention that lazy mutt to me. Look at him over there. Dead to the world. Well, it's getting late. Now, where's my hat? Confound it, where's my hat?
Please, dear, don't bark.
I'm not barking, Martha. Once and for all, I don't bark.
See? He does understand you.
You're listening to a salute to Our Miss Brooks on That Was Radio. This is WMKY 90.3 FM. In the clip that we just heard, Mr. Conklin was played by British-born actor Joe Fort. But Fort was obviously not what CBS wanted for the part, because in the very next episode, Gail Gordon was in the role of Conklin and remained there for the entire run of the program. Gordon is best known today for his television roles opposite Lucille Ball, but his portrayal of Osgood Conklin was his best work in radio. During his early life, Gordon had a slight speech impediment. As a young actor, he took lessons in diction and worked so hard on elocution that he was recognized as one of the best voices in old-time radio. Gordon made his debut on radio in 1926. During the early years of his radio career, he was successful in landing dramatic roles on shows such as Lux Radio Theater, Speed Gibson, and Sherlock Holmes. As an interesting aside, in 1935, he became the first actor to play the role of Flash Gordon. While his voice was well suited for dramatic roles, Gordon was at his best in comedy. He landed his first comedic role in 1941, playing Mayor Latrivia on Fibber McGee and Molly, a role that he continued for 12 years. On Our Miss Brooks, Gordon was Osgood Conklin, the perpetual grouch of a principal at Madison High, who seemed determined to make everyone miserable, especially Connie Brooks. But it wouldn't have been funny if he had simply been a mean man. Gordon was a master of the slow burn. Whenever something went wrong, as it often did, the audience would hear Mr. Conklin's anger as it built slowly to a sudden, often insane, outburst. Conklin's blustery reactions to Miss Brooks made her snappy comebacks all the more gratifying. Gordon, who was a thoughtful veteran actor, felt that it was impossible to overdo the character of Conklin. In a 1955 TV Guide interview, he said, "There is nothing subtle about Osgood. No nuances. Just a lot of very satisfying acid, bluster, and bellowing, with an occasional weak moment of cordiality thrown in for leavening. It is practically impossible to overplay him," he said. "Even when he's being cordial, he's like an elephant trying to waltz." In addition to Miss Brooks, there was one student that Mr. Conklin often waltzed upon. That was Walter Denton, played by Richard Crenna. Walter was a well-meaning but awkward young man with a high-pitched, whiny voice. But he dated Harriet Conklin, the principal's daughter, and that never set well with the elder Conklin. Walter was a nerd, even before the term was coined. Though he was a good enough student, his actions outside the classroom bordered on the absurd. Miss Brooks was Walter's favorite teacher, and he was her favorite student. Many episodes of the program opened with Denton stopping by in the morning to give Miss Brooks a lift to school because her car seemed always to be in the shop. Generally during these rides, the writers inserted a comment or an incident that would be crucial to a punchline later in the show. Richard Crenna was in his early 20s when he got the role of Walter, but he was already a veteran radio performer. He was born in 1926 and got his start in radio in 1937. By the time he appeared on Our Miss Brooks, he had appeared in such shows as The Great Gildersleeve, Burns and Allen, and The Hardy Family. While still working on radio, he finished high school and earned an English degree at the University of Southern California. Here is part of an April 2002 interview with Henry Coleman, during which Crenna tells how he got the job on Our Miss Brooks, and mentioning Jeff Chandler, whom we will be discussing a bit later.
I was doing a show, Oogie Pringle, on A Date with Judy, and on the show was a young lady named Sandra Gould, who played a character. Her husband was a gentleman named Larry Burns, who was a producer of a new show that was going to be done called Our Miss Brooks with Eve Arden. And she recommended me to Larry. She said, "This, we got to have him do it, and because he'd be great and blah, blah, blah." And she was my agent on the job, as a matter of fact. And I went over and signed to do the show. And it was probably one of the better experiences of my life. Working with Eve Arden taught me so much. Again, looking back and reflecting on all those people from whom I learned as a kid. Eve was a consummate performer and just such a professional. And, of course, to work with Gail Gordon, who I think probably has as good a comedy timing as anybody in the history of our business, and to be able to work with him every week for 6 years as I did. It ended up longer than I actually, because the television show came along. I love the people. We had a very strong family on the Our Miss Brooks show, and I hated to leave it. I really did, because we had such a great time. Jeff Chandler had done the radio show, Ira Grossell, and when we started the show, he became a huge movie star when we were on radio. He did played the part of Cochise in a very important 20th Century Fox film, became a movie star. Now, Jeff Chandler still had 2 years to run on his radio contract, 5 years. And he, for the same love of that cast that I had, came back and played the remaining 2 years on his original contract because he wanted to be with all of us so much. And it was that kind of a group. I mean, we really were really bonded as a family.
In another part of the interview, Richard Crenna discussed what he learned from working on the Our Miss Brooks program.
What was the kind of thing that you learned from Eve Arden?
First of all, as I said, I've said so many times, is that the sense of timing. There's something about you can direct drama. You can make somebody a dramatic actor. You cannot make anybody a comedian. That's impossible, in my opinion. You either are born with that sense, with that metronome that brings the timing of comedy to a scene, or you're not, or you don't have it. And what it was, it would just allow me to hone that. I obviously was born with that. I really have to say that. It was a gift in the sense that my ear could hear this rhythm of comedy. And it was just honed by working with all these people, by working with Eve Arden, who was just a master at that. Gail Gordon, who was an incredible comedy timing. And all the people that I've mentioned, George Burns and, you know, Red Skelton and Bob Hope. As I said, it was really studying at the feet of the greats and learning from them. And also what was a great advantage for me then, too, was that we did those radio shows with audiences. So that the sense of timing a laugh, I could hear the laugh. When I later did visual comedy, always in my head, I could hear the laugh. I could hear the laugh off stage with or without it. I knew what the rhythm was of the laughter, and I think that's a great that was a great advantage to having all of those years faced audiences and played the laughter, and then to have to go into, you know, we talk about that. We say, you know, Laurel and Hardy didn't have an audience. Of course they didn't have an audience. What did they have? They had a built-in metronome. They knew what was going on in terms of the rhythms of comedy. And I think that was, you know, that was a great advantage for me as an actor, learning.
But you also have to have a sense of humor, because you've got to know where the laughs are going to come and how big they're going to be.
I do think you have to have a sense of humor. Yeah, I have met very few people who can play comedy who have no sense of humor. Most people who play comedy do have a sense of humor.
Jeff Chandler was born Ira Grossell and grew up in Brooklyn, New York. During his early days as an actor, he worked for stock companies as a stage manager and as an actor until his career was interrupted by World War II. After the war, he worked steadily in radio, playing all kinds of roles, including, of course, Mr. Boynton on Our Miss Brooks. His first screen role came in 1947 in the film noir movie Johnny O'Clock. In 1950, while still doing the Our Miss Brooks program, Chandler appeared in the movie Broken Arrow, for which he received an Academy Award nomination. Boasting a muscular 6'4" frame, Chandler specialized in westerns and action movies until his untimely death in 1961. In his role as Philip Boynton, Chandler was the biology teacher at Madison High School and Connie Brooks' heartthrob. Despite her best efforts, however, their relationship never developed into anything substantial. I think we need to turn again to the first episode to see how the Brooks-Boynton relationship was envisioned from the beginning. This will take two clips. In the first, we hear how Miss Brooks hoped the relationship might go.
Our Miss Brooks is a school teacher. To be specific, she teaches English at Madison High. Connie Brooks is pretty enthusiastic about her work, too. In fact, in her own words.
Although teaching isn't the most profitable career in the world, you must admit the hours are appalling. But there's always my secret heartthrob, Mr. Boynton. He's the biology teacher at school. And a sweeter, more intelligent scientist never brushed off an English teacher to play footsie with a frog. But he'll come around. Even a biology teacher must sooner or later get a little biological. Meanwhile, I can dream, can't I?
Yes, Connie Brooks can dream. Even now, she's in the middle of the sweetest dream of them all. The one that comes right before 7 a.m.
Hold me closer, Mr. Boynton. There. Now kiss me. Oh, how does that make you feel? That's what it does to me, too.
Later in the first episode, when Miss Brooks has arrived at school, she has this exchange with Mr. Boynton, which lets us see the relationship a little more realistically.
Miss Brooks, if you don't mind my changing the subject, are you going to be busy tonight?
Busy? Me? Mr. Boynton, I couldn't be unbusier.
Well, I'd like to come over after dinner, that is, if we can be alone.
Alone? We'll be absolutely isolated. I hope you don't think I'm too forward, Mr. Boynton, but I've anticipated this moment for quite a while. Remember the day about 5 years ago when I first came to Madison High, rounded a turn in the corridor, and bumped smack into you?
Oh, yes. I was teaching chemistry then. You put quite a dent in my Bunsen burner.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was the day I first suspected that we'd be more to each other than just fellow faculty members.
And when were your suspicions confirmed, Miss Brooks?
On our very next date, when you took me to lunch, 2 years later. Gad, you were a fast worker.
I don't blame you for kidding me, Miss Brooks. I guess I'm not much of a whirlwind romantically. And most scientific people aren't. You see, the study of evolution alone tends to slow down any of the mere intemperate reflexes.
Mm-hmm.
You must realize that a tremendous period of time was involved before the single cell divided itself in the sea and adapted itself to the land and the air.
Mm-hmm.
Countless centuries passed before lower forms of life assumed their new shapes, and generations before the mammal family produced the ape family, and before the ape family produced the human family.
What have you been waiting for me to do? Slip back a notch?
So, throughout the program's run, Miss Brooks longed for Mr. Boynton while he affectionately tended to his mice and to a frog named MacDougall. Some of the media pundits of the day referred to Miss Brooks as man-hungry. However, when she and Richard Crenna were interviewed by Gary Collins in 1985, Arden contradicted this view.
Eve, when I introduced you, I mentioned that you were really one of the first women who was independent, said what she thought, no yes. holds barred, and was extremely man-hungry. That's the part I always loved about the show. Well, at least
I
with Mr. Boyington.
I read a wonderful article refuting that whole thing.
Really?
Yes. It said I was Boynton-hungry.
Oh, Boynton-hungry. Well, I guess that's true.
I was never chasing everybody. It was just Mr. Boynton.
Was his name Rockwell?
Bob Rockwell.
Bob Rockwell played Boynton.
And played Boynton on
Jeff
on television.
Chandler played it in radio.
Are you serious?
That's right. Jeff Chandler was the first Mr. Boynton. And remember this for Trivial Pursuits, people. You can all win a lot of money with that. And Jeff, what was wonderful about Jeff is that he did Broken Arrow right in the middle of our five-year period.
Yeah.
And, of course, became a very big movie star. And everybody assumed immediately that Jeff would say, well, I got to get out of this. I can't play on this, you know, radio show anymore. I'm a movie star. He loved doing Mr. Boynton, and he continued to play it for 5 years.
But he could, I mean, there was no way he would go from the radio to the television.
No,
he did not. He did not go to television.
Well, he
television.
Was a star by then, wasn't he?
He was a giant star.
And he was also too macho for Mr. Boynton. We had
that
one
would have really
show.
Changed the equation, wouldn't it?
Certainly would have.
We had a Christmas show in which he got to kiss Miss Brooks, and the audience just went to pieces because he gave it everything, which was entirely wrong for the character.
Before listening to an episode of Our Miss Brooks, there are a few other cast members that I want to mention. Veteran radio actress Jane Morgan played Miss Brooks' landlady, Mrs. Davis. You could say that Mrs. Davis was absent-minded, but that is an understatement. She often forgot what she was saying in the middle of a sentence. Due to a combination of naivete, senility, and nosiness, Mrs. Davis often seemed to dwell in her own surrealistic little world to which only Connie Brooks could occasionally gain access. Also frequently appearing on the show were the other members of the Conklin family. Gloria McMillan was Harriet Conklin, who, as I mentioned before, was the apple of Walter Denton's eye, much to her father's chagrin. And Virginia Gordon, Gail Gordon's real-life wife, portrayed Martha Conklin, Osgood's long-suffering spouse. The episode of Our Miss Brooks that I've chosen for today's show is entitled Student Government Day and was originally broadcast on January 16, 1949. You're listening to That Was Radio on WMKY 90.3 FM. I'm Leon Smothers.
Palm Olive Soap, your beauty hope, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous dream girl hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Last Friday was Student Government Day, a day upon which the entire administration of the city is handed over to high school pupils who have been elected by their classmates. Well, ordinarily, our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, would have very little to do with this event.
But unfortunately, Miss Johnson, the civics teacher, took ill on Thursday, and our principal, Mr. Conklin, suggested that I take over her class. Of course, I didn't have to accept the assignment. I just figured that teaching is better than being totally unemployed. In some states, it's better. At any rate, I conducted Miss Johnson's civics class on Thursday, and on the subject, What Would I Do If I Held Public Office?, the class and I had quite a spirited discussion. And in view of later developments, I'm sorry I didn't listen. But Friday morning finally rolled around, and the entire student body and faculty gathered in the assembly hall to hear Mr. Conklin officially proclaim it Student Government Day. Mr. Boynton, my bashful biologist, was sitting in the front row, and accidentally, with the aid of two bloodhounds, I found myself sitting right next to him.
Oh, hello, Miss Brooks.
Why, Mr. Boynton, this is a surprise. To you, anyway.
I didn't see you sit down. I believe I left my notebook on that seat. It's just some lecture notes on the North American porcupine.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Boynton, I didn't even notice it. He must have pulled in his quills. Here you are.
Oh, thanks. I'll just hold it in my lap.
Why don't we let the notebook have the seat and you could hold... No, not in school, I guess.
You know, Miss Brooks, something just occurred to me. We're always sitting next to each other in assembly. Fate seems to be throwing us together.
Compared to my throwing, fate is a sandlot pitcher. But perhaps you're right, Mr. Boynton. Maybe we should give fate a helping hand. I'm free for lunch today. How about you? Or would you rather ask me? Or am I being too subtle? Oh, darn that bell. I'll have to get him in the next round.
Students, faculty members, and honored guests. First of all, as your principal, I would like to announce that because this is Student Government Day, school will be suspended. Please. I sympathize with your disappointment. But as you know, Student Government Day has been tried successfully in many other communities. And I have always been ready to experiment in any progressive plan to foster good citizenship. That is why you see before you on this platform our honored guest, Mayor Remsen. Now, Mayor Remsen, would you care to say a few words?
Of course not. He only brought those 9 pages along to put his gum in.
Thank you, Mr. Conklin, for your generous introduction. As I look out upon this ocean of young, eager, intelligent faces, a tide of emotion swells up in me.
I'm getting a little seasick myself.
And as I think of the glorious future which this community can look forward to at the hands of these youths, I am deeply touched. I have always been well informed on the affairs of young people.
He ought to be. He's kissed so many babies, you can't see his tie for the pablum.
And so it is with considerable pride that I now inaugurate for the first time in this community Student Government Day. Therefore, without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce to you your duly elected mayor, Miss Harriet Conklin.
You may applaud now.
Thank you. My constituents, friends, and Mayor Remsen, I intend to show this community something new and different by making my term of office a clean and honest administration.
Well, now...
We will not tolerate graft and corruption.
We don't.
Thank you, Harriet Conklin.
As Miss Brooks said in our civics class yesterday, the racketeers must go, no matter what politician is protecting them.
Oh, that Miss Brooks certainly is a card.
That will be all, Harriet. Did you really say that in civics class?
I don't know. I wasn't listening.
Mayor Remsen, allow me to apologize for my daughter's enthusiasm. She was obviously referring to the aims of city governments in general without realizing that those aims have already been attained in our community.
Of course. And now, it is my extreme pleasure to introduce the student who has been elected your chief of police, Walter Denton.
As your incumbent police chief, I cannot re-emphasize too forcefully the remarks Miss Brooks made in civics class yesterday. To wit, every crook and grafter who has been mouthing the city treasury of funds has got to...
Thank you, Chief of Police Walter Denton.
I haven't finished my speech.
Oh, yes, you have, Denton.
But, Mr. Conklin, as Miss Brooks said just yesterday...
This is not a symposium on the memoirs of Miss Brooks. Or maybe it is. Miss Brooks, you here?
No, I couldn't make it today.
What's that? Oh, there you are. Before we go any further, isn't there something you'd like to say?
Yes, sir. Is there a doctor in the house? Conklin?
Yes, Miss Brooks, I did. In spite of my abject apologies, Mayor Remsen left here in a very ugly mood. And Miss Brooks, just what happened in civics class yesterday?
Well, we had an open discussion, and somebody opened it wider than I realized. But we only discussed corrupt city administrations in general, Mr. Conklin. We made no specific mention of Mayor Remsen's corrupt administration. I mean...
Never mind what you mean. Thanks to you, we've got a band of young malcontents on our hands.
Why, not 5 minutes ago, a student delegation was in here demanding a 3-day school week. And that's not all. They also informed me that they would like a 4-hour day, starting from the moment they leave home till the moment they arrive back there. That's portal to portal.
Next thing you know, they'll be wanting time and a half for leaving the room.
There's no telling how far this thing can go. They've got the whip hand. They're in public office today. Student government day, indeed. Whoever thought up that crack-brained idea ought to have his head examined.
Bend over, Mr. Conklin.
What?
It was your idea.
Oh, well, don't change the subject. There's no telling what... As I was saying, there's no telling what that student reform party is capable of doing. Miss Brooks, it's up to you to see that they stay out of mischief.
But, Mr. Conklin, you said this was a holiday, and I've got a very important lunch date to make.
Well, I'm sorry, Miss Brooks. You've got to chaperone those students.
But, Mr. Conklin...
Dismissed, but Miss Brooks. I said fall out. On the double.
Aye, aye, sir. Fine way to spend a holiday, chaperoning a bunch of... What am I running about? I'm halfway down the hall. Well, that's funny. I stopped right outside Mr. Boynton's biology lab. Well, I might as well go in now that I'm here.
Oh, hello, Miss Brooks. Say, I hope Mr. Conklin wasn't too severe with you.
Not at all, Mr. Boynton. How are you at setting bones? And speaking of lunch, which you weren't... The date we almost had, but didn't quite, because you didn't get around to asking me, and which I was going to talk you into, but which I would have had to cancel because Mr. Conklin wants me to chaperone the students who are acting as government officials today.
Oh, just a minute, Miss Brooks. I can't quite follow you.
Me either, Mr. Boynton. I suppose I'm trying to apologize for standing you up.
When?
Today.
You were supposed to have lunch with me today?
How nice of you to ask me. Shall we say the front steps in 15 minutes?
Oh, but...
I just want to powder my nose and fix up a bit.
But you said something about chaperoning the students.
Oh, that can wait till after lunch. See you in a little while, Mr. Boynton. I wonder if I'm playing too hard to get. Now, if I can just avoid Her Honor the Mayor and Walter Denton.
Well, Walter, there's Miss Brooks.
Hiya, Miss Brooks. We've been looking for you.
I've been lurking from you, too.
Miss Brooks, as mayor of this community... I feel that I have you to thank for many of my high ideals.
Me too, Miss Brooks. When you stood up in civics class yesterday with a kind of glowing, luminous light emanating from your skull and your chalk poised in front of the blackboard, you know who you reminded me of?
Joan of Arc at the Battle of the Erasers. Look, kids, I promised Mr. Conklin I'd chaperone you today,
wonderful,
but I have...
Miss Brooks. We're really going to clean up this town.
You have no idea what's going on in this town, Miss Brooks. If you'll just stick with us, we'll show you graft and corruption, infamy and greed.
I'd rather have Mr. Boynton show me spaghetti and meatballs. Now, if you'll just keep quiet about it, I'll meet Mr. Boynton for lunch.
Lunch? But what about the ideas of decent, honest government that you had yesterday?
Yeah, and don't you want to be in at the kill?
Who are we killing?
I'm afraid we'll have to take an executive action, Walter.
Right. Miss Brooks, I assume you still believe in obedience to duly elected authority?
Of course I do, Walter.
Then, as chief of police, I hereby appoint you deputy sheriff. For the rest of the day, Miss Brooks, you'll take orders from me.
But, Walter...
Silence!
Oui, mon capitaine.
Here, with this badge, I hereby make you a deputy sheriff.
Look, Walter, to you I'm a deputy sheriff, and to Harriet I'm a deputy sheriff. But to a deputy sheriff, am I a deputy sheriff? Hmm?
This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY 90.3 FM. You're listening to That Was Radio, where we are featuring the classic radio sitcom, Our Miss Brooks.
You'd better pull over, Walter.
Why, Miss Brooks? Oh, the siren. Now, that's on our car. I put it on this morning.
I don't want to see insubordinate, Chief, but just where are we going?
To the Jackpot Amusement Company's warehouse.
We've been watching the place for weeks, Miss Brooks, in preparation for today. And we've seen truckloads of slot machines delivered there.
Slot machines?
Sure. The kind they put in the back of candy stores where little school kids can spend their lunch money in a futile effort to get rich quick.
You know, where you pull a lever and try to hit as many bumpers as possible.
Oh, the game I play in my car.
Well, those kind aren't so bad. It's the one-armed bandits that keep the kids broke. Oh, they're all fixed.
Fixed?
Sure. If a machine pays back more than 5 cents on the dollar, they break its arm.
Here we are, the Jackpot Amusement Company.
What are we going to do here?
We're going to raid the place.
We three?
No, there's another bunch of kids coming any minute. You see, the fire commissioner had to go home and change his pants. He tore them sliding down the pole at the firehouse. Well, are you all ready, men?
Speaking for some of us, men, no.
Now, when I blow my police whistle, we'll charge.
Sorry, I don't have an account here.
Let's go.
I'm with you, Walter.
Oh, now, Walter, Harriet, listen. Let's go to a movie.
Open up in the name of the law. Are you going to open up, or do we have to break it in?
Walter, please.
Stand in back of Miss Brooks, Harriet.
Oh, fine. Now they're going to use me for a battering ram.
What's going on out here?
Trick or treat.
What's that?
Are you one of the employees of the Jackpot Amusement Company?
What if I am?
You're under arrest.
What?
Miss Brooks, you're a deputy sheriff. Arrest this man.
Pull over to the curb, bud.
Look, lady, I'm a busy man. Why don't you just take your kids over to the playground and shove them down a sharp slide? Now beat it.
Oh, resisting arrest, eh? This may go hard with you, my good man.
What's going on here? Who blew the police whistle?
I did. Officer, arrest this man.
What did he do? He tried to get fresh with you, lady.
No, and that's the story of my life.
And what do you want him arrested for?
Yours not to reason why. As your chief of police, I gave an order. Your duty is to obey.
How does that go again, Sonny?
You heard him, officer. As mayor, I decree that you arrest this individual.
Let me get this straight. You're the mayor, and he's the chief of police. Ah, who are you, lady?
I'm Joan of Arc, and stop breathing on my armor.
I do not wish to be rude, but I have to go in now. You see, I am Little Miss Muffet, and I have to go sit on my tuffet for a while.
This is your last chance, officer. Arrest that man in there, or tomorrow you'll be pounding a beat in a swamp.
Oh, pounding a beat in a swamp, is it?
Do you realize this is insubordination?
Oh, insubordination, is it?
You've just got to arrest that man.
Oh, arrest that man, is it?
This is getting monotonous, was it?
Look, folks, why don't you all run along and we'll forget about the whole thing?
Oh, that settles it. Miss Brooks, arrest this policeman.
Arrest this policeman, is it?
Now, don't start that again. Will you go quietly, or do I have to use the bracelets?
Take it easy, lady. We'll settle this in a minute.
That doesn't frighten anybody. I got one of those, too.
Good for you, Sonny.
Some people don't seem to be familiar with the Constitution of the United States, which says, we, the people of the United States
or
of America,
for that matter, the
in order to form a more perfect union, which says, establish justice.
Little Jack Horner sat in the corner eating his Christmas pie. He stuck in his thumb and pulled out a plum, and along came the Black Mariah.
Guard! Oh, guard!
That's not use, Miss Brooks. He won't even listen to us.
Let me call him. After all, I'm still mayor.
Fine mayor. She's been in office 6 hours and the whole administration's up the river.
It's as much your fault as mine. You and your police whistle.
Now, don't start bickering, children. Maybe if we behave ourselves, they'll make us trustees. Hello out there. Oh, guard. Jailer. Turnkey.
Shut up.
My, what ill-bred screws.
Yes, yes, Mrs. Denton, I'll call you the minute I hear from Walter. Goodbye. Imagine that, Martha. Mrs. Denton wanted me to call the police department. How would they know where her son Walter is? I can't understand it, Martha.
You can't understand what, Osgood?
That's the fifth parent who's called me up to ask why her child hasn't come home for dinner yet. You'd think they'd keep track of their children and not suddenly discover at 7 o'clock that they haven't come home for dinner yet. By the way, where's Harriet?
She hasn't come home for dinner yet.
What? Well, don't just stand there. Do something. Call Miss Brooks. I put the children in her charge. Call the police. The Bureau of Missing Persons. Get the district attorney. Contact the mayor. Find out if there's somebody else. Why don't they... Well, maybe you could get a hold of them. But I don't know what you're just standing there for. I'm here to... I'm concerned. Why are you not concerned? Why don't you do something? Get going.
Osgood. The like a walrus caught in a Turkish bath. I did call Miss Brooks. Mrs. Davis says she wasn't home yet. Poor woman. She's had dinner on since 6. She's terribly worried about her stewed tomatoes.
Please stop sniveling about Mrs. Davis's tomatoes. We've got our own tomato to worry about.
Please, dear, calm down a little. Here, have some fruit. It's very good for the nerves.
I don't want any fruit. Oh, that's probably Harriet now. I'll answer it. I mustn't lose my temper. I must be calm. Hello?
Osgood. You're talking in a banana.
No wonder with the house all cluttered up with fruit bowls. Hello? Is that you, Harriet?
No, Osgood. This is Margaret Davis. I've just had a call from Miss Brooks.
You have?
Yes, Osgood. Harriet, Walter Denton, and several of the other students are with her.
Oh, well, thank heaven. Tell me, Margaret, where are the children and Miss Brooks?
They're in jail, Osgood.
Fine. You see, Martha, I told you there was nothing to worry about. Miss Brooks and the children are all in jail. Hey, hey! Martha, take this phone out of my hands and put back the banana.
Here are the prisoners, young fella. You may talk with them, but don't try to pass anything through the bars.
Oh, thank you.
Why, it's Mr. Boynton.
Hi, Mr. Boynton. We've been framed.
About that luncheon date. I don't think I can make it.
What is all this, Miss Brooks?
Haven't you heard? We're celebrating Student Convict Day.
We were only doing our duty as public servants, but Mayor Remsen must have forgotten to notify any of the other authorities.
Yeah, we raided some racketeers, and the next thing we knew, we were in the pie wagon.
Well, they have no right to hold you here. Oh, officer. Officer.
What is it now?
Why, there's been a mistake. Please open this cell and let these people out of here.
Oh. Let these people out of here, is it?
Well, yes. It just happens that I've had quite a bit of legal training in addition to my biological background, and I can tell you that you have no legal basis upon which to hold them any longer.
Good for you, Mr. Boynton.
That's telling him, Mr. B.
And furthermore, I'm sure you don't want to get into any trouble.
Oh, I don't I?
Tell him you'll have him pounding a beet in the swamp.
If you persist in this belligerent attitude, you're liable to be pounding a beet in a swamp.
That's done it!
I knew you'd see it my way.
At last, Mr. Boynton, just you and I and the children.
This is absurd. I don't belong in this cell.
Now behave yourself. Behave yourself or I'll put you in solitary.
Oh, there you are, Connie.
Why, it's Mrs. Davis.
I would have been here sooner, but I just had to stop at the mass meeting.
What mass meeting, Mrs. Davis?
Oh, Mr. Boynton is with you. How nice.
Please, Mrs. Davis, we've got to get out of here now. If you'll only see...
Everybody in town was there, Connie. And I told them what you said to me on the phone about Student Government Day being run all wrong.
Good for you, Mrs. Davis. Now maybe we'll get some action.
Where's the Brooks cell?
The line forms on your left.
I also told those parents how you said that if you had been running Student Government Day instead of Mr. Conklin, there wouldn't have been so much dunderheaded bumbling.
Bumbling?
Oh, hello, Osgood. We were just talking about you.
Anybody want to buy a used teacher's license?
Well, I guess I'll be running along. Now that Mr. Conklin's here, I'm sure there's nothing further to worry about.
Miss Brooks, how could you... Why did you have to... When were you...
Oh, please, Mr. Conklin, remember your blood pressure.
It wasn't Miss Brooks' fault, Daddy. Don't blame her.
And you, Harriet, in prison. How could you do this to me? My own flesh and blood.
If you've got his blood, Harriet, you better watch your pressure, too.
Quiet, Denton. Miss Brooks, it's my painful duty to inform you that you are under suspension for conduct unbecoming a teacher. Have you anything to say in your own defense?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like a new trial.
On what grounds?
On the grounds that I'm not doing so well in this one.
Well, we'll discuss that at the proper time. Meanwhile, you children remain here in Mr. Boynton's charge until I can arrange to have... Mr. Boynton?
Hello, Mr. Conklin.
What in the world are you doing here?
I'm just visiting, Mr. Conklin.
One of those guests you just can't get rid of.
Well, we'll see all about this. I'm going straight to Mayor Remsen's office. I'll handle this matter personally.
Oh, but what'll I do in the meantime?
With a little luck, 30 days.
Well, you've done a lot for me, H.J., but I can't understand why we're dumping this slot machine deal.
Because it's too hot, Mayor. Besides, our cut ain't big enough. Also, the people are up in arms.
The people? What do they know about it?
Ed, I'm surprised at you. What do my initials stand for? H.J., Honest Jim. I'm the people's friend, Ed, and we got an election coming up. We can't afford to let the people get upset, or the first thing you know, they'll start thinking for themselves. And then where are we?
Okay, Jim, okay. I'll have the jackpot company get rid of those machines right away.
No, I've got a better idea. Ed, you're going to make yourself a hero with every parent in this community.
Huh?
You're going to let the kids do this job, the kids who were elected to public office for this one day.
Wonderful, Jim, wonderful. I'll call all my department heads, and I'll tell them the students holding office that I have complete authority.
Fine, Ed. It's democracy in action. That's what it is.
Yes, sir, democracy in action. And Mayor Remsen is solidly behind it. Until after election.
Which one of you is Mayor Harriet Conklin?
I am.
Step out, please. Now, which one of you is Chief of Police Denton?
Oh, that's me.
Come on out. I've had orders to release the both of you.
Oh, but what about Miss Brooks and myself?
Sorry, my orders didn't say anything about you two.
But I insist that you release them immediately.
Quiet, Walter. Orders are orders.
Eve Arden as our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment, but first...
Dream girl, dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight, show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a luster cream shampoo. Only luster cream brings you Kay Dumit's magic formula blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Gives loveliness lather even in hardest water. Glamorizes your hair as you wash it. Tonight, try Luster Cream Shampoo and be a...
dream girl, beautiful Luster Cream Girl. You owe your crowning glory to a Luster Cream Shampoo.
And now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, in spite of everything, Walter and Harriet got us out of jail promptly. And that wasn't the only thing Student Government Day accomplished. The racketeers left town almost immediately. In fact, the very next day, Walter took me out to the Jackpot Warehouse for a last look at the place.
Pretty deserted now, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Walter. Let's go in and see if they've cleaned out the slot machines.
I'm going to look around in back, Miss Brooks.
Go ahead, Walter. Hey, here's one of those nickel machines. What a racket. Naturally. Two lemons and an anchovy. If I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. Crime does not pay.
Next week, tune in to another Our Miss Brooks show, brought to you by Palmolive Soap, your beauty hope, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, dream girl hair. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written and directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, Helen Spring, Hans Conried, Hal March, and Herb Vigran. For mystery liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. North, the exciting, fun-packed adventures of an amateur detective and his beautiful wife. Tune in Tuesday evenings over most of these same stations and be with us again next week at the same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Stay tuned now for Lum and Abner. Bob Lamond speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You're listening to That Was Radio on WMKY 90.3 FM. After a four-year run on radio, Our Miss Brooks moved to television, taking the entire cast except Jeff Chandler, who, as we heard earlier, was by then a major movie star. Chandler was replaced by Robert Rockwell, who portrayed Mr. Boynton from then on. After Our Miss Brooks, Arden starred in two additional television shows. First, The Eve Arden Show, which was on for 1 year, and then The Mothers-in-Law, which was on for two. During her TV career, Arden received 6 Emmy nominations and won once. After these programs, she made many guest appearances on other TV shows and had roles in several movies, including Grease and Grease 2. After the Brooks years, Richard Crenna went on to star in another television comedy series, The Real McCoys, in 1957. In 1964, he took the lead role in a dramatic series, Slattery's People. Although the program only aired 36 episodes, it established Crenna as both a dramatic actor and a leading man. From then on, he had an extremely active career in both television and motion pictures. In 1985, Crenna was awarded an Emmy for his role in The Rape of Richard Beck. Also in the period after Our Miss Brooks, Crenna appeared in more than 30 motion pictures, including The Sand Pebbles, Wait Until Dark, and 3 Rambo films. Crenna has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in a prime location, opposite Mann's Chinese Theater. After Our Miss Brooks, Gail Gordon became a fixture on television and is especially remembered for 2 series with Lucille Ball. As I mentioned before, Virginia Gordon, who played Mrs. Conklin, was Gail Gordon's wife. They met while working on the Death Valley Days program and married in 1937. They remained together until their deaths a few weeks apart in 1995. In addition to acting, Jeff Chandler was an accomplished recording artist. He released several albums, as well as having a nightclub act. He also owned a music company and played the violin, as well as being a songwriter. After starring in the movie Merrill's Marauders in 1961, Chandler suffered a back injury that required surgery. During the operation, one of his arteries was damaged, and despite receiving massive blood transfusions, Chandler died in June 1961 at 42 years of age. In closing, I want to mention that both Eve Arden and Gail Gordon have been inducted into the National Radio Hall of Fame. That completes our show featuring the Our Miss Brooks program. I hope you've enjoyed it. You've been listening to That Was Radio, where we discuss old-time radio programs and the people and events that shaped them. I'm Leon Smothers, and this is Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY 90.3 FM.